mail call.
It's a mailbag Monday with a killer bees.
You've got mail.
Killer bees. Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton in for new papa, Jeremy Branham. And it's a mailbag Monday. This is your opportunity to pretty much ask Joel and I whatever it is that you want. Maybe it's sports related. Maybe it's not. Maybe you just want to talk some trash. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the HRMP listener line. On the text line. Get us on Twitter at PacManJoel at PCreighton1. Get us on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We'll get to all your questions. As long as you're basically not asking for our social security numbers.
Don't go too far.
Pretty much whatever you want to ask. I'm pretty
good
with it.
Yeah, for you.
I will literally answer anything.
Yeah, you realize that you and I have had these conversations off air before. You have a little bit more patience with this sometimes than I do.
I agree. But yeah, you know, I'll pretty much answer. If you guys ask it, I will answer it. And I'll answer it honestly. It doesn't matter. I will answer it honestly. For those of you asking about Hunter Brown, yeah, I think Hunter Brown is going to be on the postseason roster. I think Hunter Brown is going to have a role on this team in the postseason. Look, he's too damn good not to. And in the postseason, you want all your best arms. And if you're telling me, do I want, you know, Phil Maton or Hunter Brown, that's not a hard question. I was saying in the break, I don't think Maton makes the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with you. You and I both are on the same page there. I think Maton's done everything in his spot. We talk about guys that have earned their spot on a playoff roster. Phil Maton has earned his spot off a playoff roster. I mean, that dumbfounded, you know, I can't even disgrace my own last name by saying it's a blank stare. It's a constipation stare that everybody thought was cute when he was getting the immaculate innings. Hate to break it to you, but that's the face of a guy that's lost, and he can't get anybody out, and I'm not putting that guy on my playoff roster.
No, and it's way too often that, you know, in the postseason a year ago, you saw him spinning that curveball, getting the, you know, ball just falling off the plate. This year, that ball's not falling off the plate. It's just drifting way the hell off of it. You know, the pitch is 6-7 inches outside. Too many times, when he misses, he's not even close.
Dre brings up a good point, though. For as good as it was addition by subtraction, I said that when they got rid of Jake Odorizzi, and you and I went back and forth on that before it happened. The fact is Will Smith, as much as Dusty found that circle of trust real quick with him and kept throwing him out there, there's real concerns about him as well. He's your only lefty out of the bullpen, but he hasn't looked great. So I don't know where he sits on the playoff roster.
You already knew I didn't like that trade.
Well, I already knew that because you had man love for Jake Odorizzi.
If I've got a starting pitcher who's better than league average, he has a value.
How's he been in Atlanta?
I don't care because it's not my problem anymore.
All right.
But when he was here,
thank God.
When he was here, he threw to his 3.74 ERA. That's a solid ERA.
Well,
I know he doesn't throw 97 miles an hour.
He's beating the A's.
I don't care who he beats. He's got to beat somebody. And he did. And he pitched for your essentially seventh starter because you had a 6-man rotation and McCullers wasn't pitching. For the guy who was your seventh starter was pitching better than most teams' fourth starters.
It was a pain in the ass.
In your opinion. His teammates didn't think so.
You and I talked about it. You know, it was different in the clubhouse. Dusty thought so.
Do we know that?
He even said after he left the fact that he's fine with Dusty. But he admitted all the problems that they had and the problems he had with Dusty. Called him a Hall of Fame manager, but also said he thinks they're fine now, which basically solidified the fact they had issues. He showed it the one time he came off the mound. Was it last year when he completely cussed him out? He went full freaking Ken Giles on him.
I like when a guy is willing to fight for his spot.
That's fine.
You know, and you don't have to always be polite in the way that you ask for things as long as the respect is there. All right. That's a dumb question. I'm not going to get to that one. Somebody said, where can an L.A. guy find some good Mexican food here in Houston?
That's a dumb question.
Other than every, like, yeah, corner.
Well, first of all, at least you define the stupidity, L.A. guy. I mean, if you're an L.A. guy and you don't know where to find good Mexican food in Houston...
Good. Well, maybe you just don't know where we're around the city yet. Just throw them a few answers.
Don't go to a place that looks like a freaking fast food joint. You're going to probably be okay.
I don't know. I have no problem eating
Taco
Bell.
What's your go-to?
Rucci's right down here is good.
Yeah.
I like going there. I like Tacos a Go-Go. But I'm also a person who will eat Taco Bell anytime it's available.
Papacito's is also a can't miss.
They don't have one.
Their queso's fantastic.
But I do like them. La Finca by me. Love La Finca. There's two locations by me. Love them. But yeah, you pretty much can't go wrong.
You just want great food. Go to Cobos Q. That solves all problems.
Would you rather be a star player on a losing basketball team or the 12th man on a championship team?
Well, it depends on how much I got in my bank account. Because if I'm the star player on a lousy team, I'm probably going to make a whole lot more money than the 12th man on a championship team, no matter what the playoff shares are.
Can I also get traded?
I was going to say, someone else is going to want you at a certain point. And the way things are going these days with pick your own team, Brendan, why are you shaking your head? Because I would like to, I'm curious where you're shaking it, because the fact to me is...
Who would you rather be? That's the question.
I just said I'd rather be the best player on a bad team because I'm going to get a bigger payday.
It's all, like, I think it takes the fun out of the question when it's, I want more money.
Well,
isn't it, don't we all?
Hold on. Exactly. That's why it takes the fun out of the question. Do you want to be rich or poor? Hey, I'd rather be rich.
Well, here's the backside to that, right? If you think about the arc of a career, when you're young, it's okay to be the best guy on a bad team and get your max contract. When you're older, if you haven't gotten a ring, you can go chase a ring.
You hit your wagon with a minimum contract, or with Tracy McGrady trying to get one with the Spurs. Wait a minute, if you want fun, I could say the 12th man, and then I could also show you on eBay when I was trying to sell the ring I won for being the 12th man on a championship team because I'm hard up for bucks.
I just think everybody would rather be a 100 millionaire, right? Like the question's easy if it's about money. That's my opinion.
But because I'm with Pat, you can win a ring at any time in your career, even when you are, because someday you will be the 12th man. If you're going to hang around that long. What else you got?
This is the one that I thought was a dumb question.
Okay.
But I'm gonna throw it out at you guys anyway. Somebody said, do you think Yordan got sick due to the jab?
Due to what?
Getting vaccinated, basically, the jab.
I didn't know we just got vaccinated recently?
I don't know that that's the case. And I think it was a dumb stupid question.
Yeah.
But it does get into something that we'll get into in a little bit regarding Jordan and Dubon that we've teased. We just haven't gotten to it yet as far as the construction of the Astros lineup. 80s, 90s, 2000s, or teens, which decade was better sports-wise? I guess it depends on what team you're a fan of. If you're a fan of the Astros, it's the teens. If you're a fan of football, it was not the 90s because they lost a team around here. Although, if you're a fan of the Rockets, it was the 90s.
Are you talking nationally or locally, too? Because you can talk about the heyday of a certain sport in a certain generation when you saw the best players, even if you were the best individual players on a bad team, Brendan. Or you could talk about from a Houston perspective because, I mean, you know what the dog days were like in the early 2000s until you got to the point where you were going to compete consistently for playoffs and such. But, I mean, I think right now, the easy answer in terms of what's not the answer is the Rockets suck, the Texans suck, the Astros are great. Two out of your three are really bad.
I was going to say is if we get into the teens, right? The end of the teens was the Rockets getting to Western Conference Finals, the Astros winning World Series, the Texans have a star quarterback.
Yeah.
It looked like everything was going in the right direction for all three teams. Right up until 2021. So the teens
probably
might be the best for this area because you got a world title in baseball. You went to two Western Conference Finals with the Rockets. And the Texans had, at the time, best quarterback in their history. The only guy who was a real franchise quarterback going through at that time.
I'll agree with you.
That might be the best one.
Because 94 and 95, when the Rockets were winning titles, that's when the Oilers were on the way out.
And losing huge leads.
Yeah, and the Astros were not relevant to that degree, correct?
No, 94 was the strike year.
That was the Bagwell MVP year.
But they could never really get anything done in the postseason. They faced the Braves in the first round and...
Right.
They started finding postseason success 2004, 2005. In the 90s, they didn't really have any postseason success.
And when was the Randy Johnson trade was which year? Because they lost to Kevin Brown in the playoffs with the Padres.
99.
Okay. I was just curious. You're probably right. Probably
98 or 99, because the Padres went to the World Series in 98 against the Yankees, and they got smoked. So it was probably 98.
Okay.
Because that would be the year they would have faced the Padres. Padres would have went to the World Series.
All right. Any more you got before we get out of here? Because I just love, this is Brendan's jam. I love it. It's got a little. It's got a good beat.
All right.
To it.
This is a little smack talk type of question. Okay. Astros get a leadoff double. Who do you trust to at least move the runner to third? Jeremy Peña or Dubon?
Dubon.
Right
I
now,
I don't think that Jeremy Peña. I think Jeremy Peña is a guy like Bregman when he was struggling. I think Jeremy Peña focuses too much on trying to pull everything sometimes. I think that Dubon is at least a veteran player that could get the ball to advance a runner.
All right.
Where are you?
I don't disagree with that. I think Dubon is better at bunting. I think he's better at bat control. I don't think he's as good a hitter.
No, I'm not saying that. But that wasn't the question. Tell
if
him,
you're
Brendan.
Talking about
referee
advancing,
that. Tell him.
If you're talking about advancing a runner just to move the runner to third, I would take Dubon, more skilled bunter, more skilled at moving the ball the other way. This is a fun one.
All right. I like fun ones.
Who would you rather add to the Houston Astros? Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani?
Ooh, that is a good one.
Because I've posed this one on Late Hits a few times. And obviously, for me, if you go get Aaron Judge as a right-handed hitter looking at the Crawford boxes,
oh my God.
He might hit 70.
I would say because you have the surplus of starting pitching you have. And as you mentioned, Shohei's a left-handed hitter. But you put Aaron Judge in this lineup with that short porch, and he's a good defensive outfielder, I'll take Aaron Judge.
Yeah, you know, Ohtani, who is literally a number one starting pitcher. That dude is an ace.
Age is going to factor into this. It should.
And Judge is going to be 30 or 31.
He's a little older than people
Shohei
think.
Is 28.
Yep.
Shohei, he can play outfield, but the Angels never play him in the outfield because they're afraid of him overextending his arm. But he can play the outfield, but he's a legit power bat who's probably going to hit 35, 40 homers. And he's a clutch hitter. Aaron Judge has shown he's a clutch hitter. Aaron Judge has shown he can play center field. Which, for a guy his size, to be able to play center, Aaron Judge is 6'7" and 260 pounds.
If you have an outfield, not that's not the greatest defensively, but if you have an outfield with Tucker and Judge,
oh my goodness,
and either Yordan or a left fielder with Yordan at DH, look the hell out.
That's what I'm trying to say. Could you imagine you've got Judge and Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Altuve in the same? That's an all-star lineup.
Good God.
If you were worried about the offense, you're not worried about the offense.
But can he bunt, Pat? Can he bunt?
Yeah, he can bunt 472 feet. It's a check swing homer for Aaron Judge. That lineup to me would be absolutely insane. And not only that, but you're giving two gigantic middle fingers to the Yankees, which is just
as
important.
But as an Astros fan, do you want him? Would you take him?
Aaron Judge?
I think there's Astros fans that might have a little bit.
I would take
hesitancy.
Aaron Judge.
I would. You would.
Absolute freaking blink. The same way that the Yankees would take Jose Altuve in an absolute freaking blink.
Oh, look what you did there. All right. Well, that was a good mailbag. That was fun.
We ended with a good question.
All right. Well, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at MyBookie. We know football season's right around the corner. And there's only one place to go if you're going to put any kind of bets down to make even the least interesting game a little bit more interesting. You go to MyBookie. Because MyBookie, as I've always told you, takes care of their customers, and they do it on a daily basis. How do you ask? Well, a lot of times it's by doubling your deposit. They're going to make sure that whatever money you put in, they're going to double it so you have more money in your account, and you have more times where you can actually have money to play with and chances to win. From the NFL preseason, and there's still a week of games, there's opportunities with MyBookie. If you're a seasoned bettor or a first-timer, MyBookie gets you and your money with that double deposit bonus I was talking about, up to $1,000. To claim that bonus, just sign up. Go to MyBookie.com. Use that promo code BET975 on your first deposit, instantly doubling the money you put in with MyBookie. It's simple. A $250 deposit puts $500 in your account, and you can use your funds to bet on as many individual games, contests, and props as you want. Bet on team win totals, predict the Super Bowl winner, or use the MyBookie prop builder to give yourself the edge you need to secure that bag. As I've always told you, there's only one place to go, and there's only one site to know, and that is if you're betting sports at anything at all, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. That's MyBookie.com.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So this conversation actually wound up going all the way through the break on Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. Brendan was surprised that we both went with Aaron Judge. He says he would have gone with Shohei Ohtani. And look, I love the idea of getting a star pitcher. But if you get Ohtani, if the reason he DHs all the time is because he can't play the outfield and then pitch effectively, or he doesn't want to play the outfield, and we don't know the answer to that question because we're not Astros and we're not Angels insiders. You already have Yordan Alvarez, who is primarily a DH. Do you want to play Yordan in the outfield 140 games?
Well, or are you going to find speed in the outfield in what, left field? Because you're going to play Aaron Judge in center and you're going to play Tucker in right, and you're going to have to make up for, if you're going to make up at least the left center field gap and try to make up some of the speed, you could play someone in left field that is quicker. But I think, look, I said all along, I don't like Yordan in left field. I don't like the risk of how brittle he can be and what he's been in the past medically. I think ultimately the position I'd feel most comfortable with him at is first base, but he doesn't have enough reps there, and we don't know if he can scoop and dig and do the things that he needs to do. We know he's got a good arm, but it would be quite an adjustment to see him have to make the transition to first base. But I would feel a lot more comfortable with a big target at first base. That's why I asked you in the break, do you think Judge could ever play first base?
I think people overestimate how easy it is to play first.
It's not
as easy as people think.
That's
it
correct.
Is. The Mets tried to teach Mike Piazza how to play first base. It was a disaster. The Astros tried to teach Yordan Alvarez how to play first base. He played left field. There's a reason.
Well, for a while.
They also made
Jeff Bagwell a first baseman, and he did it quite well.
Well, he was a third baseman by trade. Right. He just wasn't very good at third base. And that had a lot to do with his arm.
No, it was more about the fact that you already had Caminiti at third, so there was no place for him.
He also didn't have the most accurate arm.
And Cammy had a cannon.
But Bagwell could pick it. Yordan apparently couldn't because the Astros tried to teach him first base for a year and a half. It didn't work. You could play Judge in left and Tucker in right. And, you know, they got a kid in AAA in Pedro Leon who they signed as an international free agent who they think would have been a top four draft pick if he entered the draft, who has power, who has speed, who draws a ton of walks. Soon as he gets that average up, he's got all the tools complete. He's got a cannon for an arm. If Jake Myers doesn't recover from the labrum surgery to get back to the guy that he was last year, well, Pedro Leon is sitting there to be the guy running from coast to coast in between Kyle Tucker and Aaron Judge. And, you know, look, if you know Aaron Judge, you know he's got a cannon for an arm. Nobody is running on Aaron Judge at Minute Maid Park because you would be just absolute cannon fodder.
I think what you lose speed in the gaps in the alleys, you gain by the plus arms and defensive smartness of both Tucker and of Judge. It just becomes who's in left field because you can circumvent a little bit what you normally would do with a center fielder because Judge doesn't have all that much speed. But like I said, if you get a quicker left fielder, you know, you can shade him a little bit more to the right side. You can still find coverage in terms of the gaps, but because of what you're talking about, the strength of the arms in the outfield, that also raises the level of teams that are going to be apprehensive around the base pass as opposed to being very aggressive.
And teams already know.
People are going to run on Michael. People were running on Brantley. People were running on a lot of arms and depending on who was out. People are going to run on Dubon when he's got a better chance of hitting the mascot or the damn press box than he does home plate.
No, Doobie doesn't have a great arm. Tucker has a terrific arm, and he's accurate, and we have seen Tucker nail guys left and right.
Yep.
You would think at some point teams are going to learn we probably shouldn't run on Kyle Tucker. In the meantime, please keep running and giving the Astros free outs because that's all they're doing. But to have Tucker with his arm in right, Aaron Judge in his arm in left, and you put, if Myers can overcome the injury and get back to the guy he was last year where he was gunning guys down with a cannon for an arm and he was hitting the high 270s, 280s, or that guy becomes Pedro Leon who can literally cover two-thirds of the world and another guy, absolute cannon for an arm, Pedro Leon, blazing speed. He's got like 30-something stolen bases in AAA right now. You'll make up the ground with a center fielder who's a roadrunner. And then to have those bats and add Yordan in and add Bregman in. Bregman, tell you, since he had the baby, boy, Alex Bregman looks like he's right back.
Dad power is unbelievable.
See this big old chip on my shoulder? Guess what's back, baby?
I told Branham, like, if he can somehow capitalize on this dad power thing going like Breggy has, more power to him, because I'm looking forward to just this show skyrocketing because of what Breggy has showed the dad power has done.
Bregman looks like Bregman again.
And the swag's back. All you got to do is watch the dugout and the celebrations to know this is what we've been waiting for a year and a half. Get the damn swag back that meant so much from an intangible perspective to the overall attitude of this team. It's got an attitude again, thanks to him.
I love it, man. We've been waiting for old ticked off Breggy to be back now, really since he was forced to apologize that, the first day of spring training, and Jim Crane made everybody apologize and basically neutered the whole team. And somehow Carlos Correa became the one guy who grew a pair. And, you know, we all thought Bregman would be the defiant one. And he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And it kind of stunned everybody. And then he got a little more reserved in the way he played and had the same energy. And the bat fell off and he had the injuries. And it's like, all right, what happened to Alex Bregman? What happened to the guy who probably should have been the MVP? But, you know, we had to give it to a guy who missed like 45 games on a team that was 20 games under 500. Where was that guy? Because that guy's been back.
A lot of people thought he was never coming back.
He got
a lot
12
of people plus thought
OPS
that
the last month.
That was a lost cause if you thought Bregman could get back to that level. Now, not that he's MVP level, but the fact that if you just take his last 2-plus months, you totally realize the fact that this guy is more than capable of finding it and being the kind of guy that can be sitting anywhere in the middle of your lineup and being a massive key to victory every single night. And then defensively, because again, there was a time where you could tell it was so taxing on him offensively that it was starting to hurt his defense. Defensively, the plays that he's been making again at third base, that's the Alex Bregman of old that everybody loves, that everybody knows, that everybody wants to never see go away again.
And a lot of that is the aggression, right? When you are playing aggressively, you'll charge, you've got confidence, you're going to fire that ball off. When you're not playing that same way, you're thinking about it, your throws are offline. And, you know, for as much as, you know, Yuli has not produced the bat this year, Yuli saves at least 2 errors a game between Bregman's wide throws, Peña's bounce throws, Altuve's bounce throws. Yuli is saving everybody's rear end at least of 2 errors a game.
No doubt. Look, and again, it's hard to put as much value on defensively from the digging the ball out to, you know, and the scoops made to the way he adjusts his feet to make good defensive plays at first base. But look, he's been a way above average defensive first baseman. But this team, especially with what you expect out of your first baseman offensively, this team has to get consistent offensive production from a first baseman, no matter who it is. And at his age, it's not as easy as with Bregman saying when he's healthy, and it's going to take him a little time to recover from the surgery and whatever, but he's going to be back to the old Alex Bregman. It was easier to say that than to say at a certain point, Yuli's just going to fall off and he ain't coming back because he's in his late 30s.
And that, unfortunately, like the difference between Yuli and Bregman obviously is 10 years in difference in age. We've seen this before where guys are just great until they're not. You know, Robbie Alomar hit 300 with like, oh, I think 30 homers his last year in Cleveland. Gets traded to the Mets, can't hit a beach ball.
Robbie Cano sends the massive deal and Robbie Cano falls off the planet whether it was the PEDs or not.
Carlos Baerga. All-star every year in Cleveland.
It was bye-bye Baerga for a long time.
Jeremy Bernitz.
Wow.
Jason Bay.
Boy, are you pulling some names.
There are so many guys where just one day, move on.
One day, I hate to say it. Modern day right now, I hate to say it. Christian Yelich.
He had that ugly knee injury, and he hasn't hit since.
From where he was and what Milwaukee gave up to get him, and it looked like a steal at the time when Jeter was just yard sailing. I mean, for what they're paying him, he has been a huge disappointment.
You know, Cody Bellinger hasn't.
Massive.
He's
another
been
one.
Up,
there you
down,
go.
Up, down. But, I mean, those were at least our younger guys. When you're an older guy, once when you have that precipitous decline, there is no back.
Nope.
You could be 27, have a bad year, bounce back.
To wrap this up and put a bow on it in terms of where we are and where we're going, do you think that there's a scenario where Yuli Gurriel is your first baseman next year for the Houston Astros?
No.
I don't either.
I could maybe see him coming back as a utility player.
Sure.
You know, because he probably won't ask for a lot.
He can play multiple positions.
He won't ask for a lot of money. He is a well-liked guy in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He is...
Let me tell you where he goes if that doesn't work out or go to his liking. He'll play a year with his brother in Toronto.
You can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And Yuli's, because he can play first, he can play second, he can play third. He can come off the bench and give you a professional at bat.
Mm-hmm.
He'll make contact.
And you know, as an aging player, too, he can bounce back quicker just in spurt roles here and there as opposed to an everyday first baseman and the beating and what it takes to get your body ready every day. At a certain point, you just don't react like you used to.
He's a defensive replacement. And you know what? If he has any ability at all to play left field, he's Marwin Gonzalez, just better.
If Click saved all this money, if Click really didn't have to overspend, and depending on what happens with the guys you traded for, there's a damn good chance that you could go out, and I've mentioned this multiple times in the last couple of weeks, but you could still go get Josh Bell. You just don't have to pay for him. If first base is going to be an issue for you in the offseason, there's nothing precluding you from saying, I can go sign Josh Bell. If all those things that were being discussed when they were talking about trading for him, Texas guy, wants to play in Texas, wants to play for a winner, all those things, you can still go get him. You don't have to pay anything. You don't have to pay him, but you don't have to give up anything.
Right, you're only giving up money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in this offseason, that might be all it takes to get Aaron Judge. Just giving up some money.
It's a lot of money, Chief.
You know what? Sometimes
Jim Crane isn't exactly quick on opening the checkbook like he used to be.
You
got to pay Verlander, too.
Verlander, you're going to pay short term.
Okay.
You're not paying Verlander 8 years.
Backload the contract with Aaron Judge. Patrick Creighton, he's the negotiator extraordinaire.
I'd actually front load the contract. I don't want to be paying him $40 million at the end, but we'll get more on that later on, because we wanted to ask you about the Astros lineup. And then I got an interesting scenario for you that Dana White says almost happened. Next.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Here's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We'll get to the phones right here. Rolando, you're on the Killer Bees. What's up, Rolando?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, since Joel is talking about Aaron Judge, and he is an upcoming free agent, I just want to know if you were James Click, either one of y'all, what would be y'all's asking price for, what would be y'all's price for Aaron Judge? I'll give y'all mine. 3 years, $150 million. Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate the call, Rolando.
$50 million a year for Judge. Unrealistic or realistic? So I think Ohtani, and Jeremy's brought this up. Brendan, you might have been in a discussion because the three of us had it. I think Ohtani's going to be the first guy that pushes 50.
I don't think Judge is going to get, I also don't think Judge is going to settle for a 3-year deal.
I agree with that, too. It's going to be like a Carlos Correa-type negotiation. He's looking for a big bag long-term.
And he doesn't have, even though he's had injuries,
he's 31.
He doesn't have the stigma that Correa had with the injuries.
This is the combo platter of if you took Springer's situation and Correa's situation and combined it. You got the age of Springer. You've got the connection with the fan base and everything of Correa. And you've got a tough decision to make because long-term never pans out, as we've shown over and over again.
That's not entirely true.
That Pujols, you've got Cabrera, you've got a lot of guys.
You've got Verlander, you've got Scherzer, you've got Kershaw.
Those are all pitchers.
But they panned. Long-term deals pan when you do them right. If you sign guys at 34 to long-term deals, no, they never work. When you sign guys at 26, 28 to long-term deals, they have worked.
But I get when you're only pitching every fifth day, it's a whole lot different than giving a 10-year deal to a guy that's 31 years old or an 8-year deal.
Pitcher more likely to get hurt than player.
But
elbows and shoulders.
But I'm not talking about hurt, Pat. I'm talking about production. Because we talk about shell of themselves. The Angels had to know going in. They just didn't know it was going to be that bad. When they went and got Albert Pujols, they knew they were getting him for the here and now and the foreseeable short-term future. But they also knew that he was going to decline. They just didn't realize how quickly he would decline.
It took 1 year. His second year there, he fell.
It was completely. It was way sooner than they thought.
And one of the things that's interesting, we were talking about in the break about, you know, here's Pujols, you know, trying to chase 700 home runs. Pujols is hitting 273 this year. He's got an 863 OPS in 198 at bats. You know the last time Pujols had an OPS over 800 for a season?
St. Louis?
2012, his first year in Anaheim. That's how long it's been he's been just an 800, that's like all-star level, for a guy who is a stone-cold locked first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had an 800 OPS in a decade.
I just, the long-term is so scary, and I think all owners are terrified to overcommit now because of some of those things. Maybe with a pitcher they do, but I don't think they do it with a position player. I think they definitely, once you cross that 30 threshold, I think as Aaron Judge, 31, I think he's looking at, if he wants the big dollars, I think he's looking at five or six. I don't know.
I think he'll push for seven. But yes, he's going to be 31 in April next year. So it's essentially his age 31 season. So
he knows this is his last big one, but I don't think the teams are going to be amicable to 6-7 years.
I think they're gonna try to get seven.
His agent is for sure.
Six might do it. Would you do 6 years, $250 million?
A
little bit over $40 million.
I think. Yeah. I mean, look. I think the key is going to be the salaries are only going to go up. So you might, as long as he's still relatively productive, you might catch to where a contract that looks outrageous, or you know, when he signs it, might be more in line with the going rate when he gets to the last couple of years. That's a stretch, but I think it had to be under consideration. From a marketing perspective, the return on investment is going to be added to the lineup you have. Now, you still have to, if it's from the Astros perspective, you still have to sign Kyle Tucker. But the fact is that when you, like you said, when you put that offensive lineup on the board, it's an all-star team.
If you want to extend the window, mm-hmm, of your championship, you want a guy like Justin Verlander.
Not just good playoffs.
Right. We're talking about championship window. You want Justin Verlander to say, you know what? I want my $34 million, but I only want it from you.
He's getting more than 34.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right? Verlander's probably going to wind up getting like a Max Scherzer type of deal.
Yes, he is. That's what he's going to want. That's his target. You know that's his target.
And you know what? If Verlander wants 3 years and $120 million, pay that man. Because other teams are afraid of him. And your team gets a bounce every time he goes on the mound. But other teams are scared to death of Justin Verlander. You pay him until he says, I don't want to play anymore. But to bring in a guy like Aaron Judge and just take your lineup from a good lineup to an absolute murderer's row lineup, you're scaring the other teams. You're intimidating.
As much as the Yankees tried to scare everybody with just home run or bust, that's the kind of lineup that gives you everything that you could ever ask for. Hit for average, hit for power, hit for both. That is downright scary.
And that is, like I said, you want to extend your window. At some point in time, the Astros are going to have to accept the fact they're going to have to pay the tax. And considering if you brought in Aaron Judge, you're going to have 40,000 people at Minute Maid every single night. You're going to be able to raise the prices yet again. And people are going to pay it because people pay to see a winner.
Crane's a businessman. He's going to find ways to recoup that money.
Aaron Judge is one of the most popular players
in the
league.
Aaron Judge jersey nights are going to be like ring night.
He sells. He's a top 10 selling jersey every year. You are going to make your money. Plus, he's one of those guys who advertisers love him. He's got like a goofy but a friendly smile.
Mm-hmm.
People love him. He's starting to get a ton of advertisements and endorsements. He would be extremely popular. All right, you don't think he's going to be on every HEB commercial? Because he totally is.
So King of Twist says he's going to the Dodgers. I think the Red Sox are going to make a hard play for him because they've got money to spend, and they know that they haven't been as relevant as they like.
And it doesn't matter whether you're the Dodgers or the Red Sox. When you can steal from the Yankees, you win twice.
Oh, absolutely.
You win twice.
Absolutely.
And for the Astros, could you imagine they steal Aaron Judge from the Yankees? Not only are the Astros basically the mega powers, but nobody left in the American League is a real challenger. they're now that much better. There is now a chasm between them and everybody else in the league. It doesn't matter how much money the Rangers decide they're going to spend because they can't pitch.
The Mariners Nobody are is young, but they can't even come close to putting that lineup or that pitching staff together.
No, they can't.
Because that's the thing we've talked about. The fact that the nucleus is there to be a long-term playoff team and extend this run, when you have the young pitchers under team control, when you have a middle of the lineup that's going to have Yordan in it, that's going to have Bregman in it, that you pretty much believe is going to have Tucker in it, that you have Pena in it. So you've got a bunch of guys with a lot of very friendly contracts. Yordan was a freaking steal the way it looks right now. And you look like if you just add that one big extra piece, man, look the hell out.
This, you add Aaron Judge in it, and we're into next level, holy cow,
yep,
type offense. And you're not looking for a ring. You're looking for rings. Not one, not two, not three, not four. You're looking for rings.
Easy, LeBron.
And it's like you want to talk about getting people in the building. This is why the Yankees get to charge the most ridiculous ticket fees, because people go to see the star power. Star power sells, and even though they can't get out of their own way right now, those tickets are already bought. That merchandise is already bought. That money is already counted. At some point, I agree with you. Jim Crane is going to realize, yes, I'm going to pay the tax, but the amount of money that we're going to print from winning in the postseason,
he's smart business merchandising, guy, no doubt about it.
They're going to know they're going to make all that money up. We got one more segment to go here on the Killer Bees. He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, home stretch on the Killer Bees. Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Brand. I'm now joined by Cody Stutes of The Wheelhouse. What's up, Cody?
Hello, PC. I have a question before we get going.
Are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to just completely bogart the segment?
Well, Jeremy would never let me. But
I was going to say, because the previous guy would not allow that.
I think PC
because he'd still be talking right now.
Is this?
Ooh, geez, wow.
Tough crowd.
Zing. Is this, and Joel, I want to say this the right way,
okay,
so I don't want to lump you in the wrong situation. Mm-hmm. Is this the beefiest three-person combo we could put together from the 97.5 lineup? You're working out. You're muscular. Me and PC are large individuals. Is this the beefiest three-man?
Oh, leave your boy out in there with a sweatshirt.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about at this desk, though.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Yeah.
I think Lance will give you a run for your money to at least be like a platoon player.
Okay. He's the fourth man on the Mount Rushmore of beef for ESPN 97.5. Yeah.
Large and in charge.
Yeah.
There we should be.
If you ask poor Marine, it'd be a slam dunk. We know that. Yeah. We absolutely know that.
Oh, there we go. All right. Now I just had that question.
How was your weekend? Your Texans won? Y'all giddy?
Yeah. I mean, they didn't look very good, but they won.
I was going to say, the thing that really kind of torqued me a little bit was looking at everybody social media-wise losing their mind because of the stat line for Davis Mills. They didn't watch the majority of the first half.
Man, it's tough because there's clearly not every starter that's going to be on the field week one with the Indianapolis Colts that's on the field. But at the same time, there's stuff that Davis Mills did in that game that would scare you a little bit if he did it in the regular season. So I think that's where I kind of – and I'm not in love with this throw to Nico. Like, it was – the situation they were in, he chalks it up to Nico. They try to get the touchdown. But if he made that throw, like, people act like it's a great throw. If it's a great throw, you can make it on any down, any distance, any time in the game. That's what a great throw is. Mm-hmm. Okay? If he made that throw on a first down with like 6 minutes left in the first quarter, I'd be furious. Even if it did come down with the touch. That's not a throw Davis Mills should be making in most situations. In that situation, it makes sense because you're trying to get the touchdown. But like, people acting like that's a great throw. Like, I mean, it was a throw that ended up in Nico's hands. If he made that throw in the first quarter with, like, you know, on second down, I'd be furious.
You want a sponsorship opportunity if he continues to do that and that's his thing?
What's that?
That's when Nico's. Oh, look what I did there.
You know,
hello, Dimitri on line one.
I had that for the first time
last week. The first time.
I know. It's a bad Houstonian job.
It's a Houston gem.
I know. Bad job by me. And then I finished with the Luka Modis. You know about those?
But do you know about the Joel special?
There's a
not
Joel
on
special.
The menu, but if you ask for it, it's a one button and done chicken grilled chicken salad.
Right. I didn't think
you did because the fries are all well. But I'm saying if you ever have that crate, try it.
I finished with the honey balls, so I was not trying.
I bet
to be
you did because all Cody Stute's weekend out excursions should end with honey balls.
Exactly.
I got to find out the Joel special is a real thing.
It's a fact. It's a fact on the register too. Verify it.
Gonna have to grill chicken stuff because I like that. Whatever they marinate the meat in is tremendous.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I have it done. I have the chicken done. You guys know me. It's a little bit more well done, but that grilled chicken well done that. Oh boy,
that's when Nico's man. That's great. I like that.
Also, like there the large like the slice. It's like a quarter of a potato.
It is a full chicken breast. It is the bed of lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, and no olives.
Oh, I like the olive
dressing on the side.
Okay, that's good.
I'm good with that because I'm not an olive fan either.
Yeah,
that's good. That's good. Hey, Brendan, can you pita that somewhere else so that we can come back to it later? The Nico's. Get it?
Yep.
Peter that somewhere else.
Got it.
All right, guys. So Dana White recently said that Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski were all but signed, sealed, and delivered to the Raiders before John Gruden 86'd it. That Dana White was actually part of bringing them in. They were both going to be Raiders. Gruden 86'd it, so they wound up going to Tampa Bay. Bigger miss than Peyton Manning and Gary Kubiak?
Ooh. Yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it?
Like, and isn't it puzzling because Gruden, no matter how much he's the mad tinkerer with quarterbacks and the offensive guru, you have to have guys that can execute your offense. Pretty sure that those two guys could make sure they could execute his offense.
I'm flabbergasted by the amount of teams that seemingly didn't want to move heaven and earth to get Tom Brady on their squad.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like
I think there was so many teams leery of the fact at a certain point he's going to fall off the planet.
Right. Like Tampa ends up with him, but obviously he wanted the Miami situation. That was kind of that report's come out over the past few weeks. I still believe San Francisco, based on the people that I've heard talk about it, San Francisco told him no at one point, deciding to stick with Jimmy Garoppolo, which was an idiotic mistake. Now we find out that the Raiders told him no. How many people did he talk to before he ended up in Tampa? Because I thought Tampa was actually one of the best situations.
Yeah, you would
for
think
him.
That he would be turning people away.
Yeah.
And instead, it looked like everybody was afraid to touch him. And from a Kubiak, was it Bob McNair that legendarily had this quote, "Why do we need Peyton Manning when we already have Matt Schaub?"
Yeah, their loyalty to Matt Schaub cost them Peyton Manning more than likely a few Super Bowl runs.
Now, I'll say this in moderate defense of them. At the time, we had no idea what was going on with Peyton Manning. He had neck surgery. We didn't know at the time he actually had four neck surgeries. We only knew about one back then. But he had four neck surgeries. And a month before training camp, he was playing catch with Eli, and he could barely throw 15 yards. So, like, what happened with Peyton Manning? Nobody foresaw that he was going to, like, 2 years later, rewrite the record
book. But both are risk-reward, right? That scenario that you perfectly painted is you don't know what you're going to get out of Manning. But to the reason why people were so apprehensive about Brady, because at a certain point he's going to fall off, and you don't know, and you pretty much are confident at his age he ain't coming back.
Correct, yeah.
At least he's not supposed to.
Right, he's not supposed to. Man, I just think Al Davis would be so disappointed that didn't happen.
Oh, Al Davis would have fired John Gruden even if he had 90 of the 100 million still on the contract.
Think about where the Raiders could be literally like today, because I'm assuming it's not like maybe the Gruden stuff still comes out. The Raiders could have Josh McDaniels as the head coach, Tom Brady as their quarterback, and just be still on their way and maybe even have a Super Bowl run.
But the question would be, would they still be in Oakland? Because at that point, when Gruden was coaching, wasn't he still in Oakland? They hadn't moved to Vegas yet?
I think they are.
And they needed a new stadium?
They were headed to L.A. or Vegas no matter what because Davis needed the money.
But could you imagine they go to Vegas
God, and they Brady and win Gronk with, in Vegas.
And Brady takes them to the Super Bowl first year in Vegas.
And Gruden, for all of his personality and the marketing that goes with him and Brady and Gronk and winning.
There's no way to me, though, that Gruden would have got out of the way to the level that they needed to get out of the way for Brady. Like, you hear this stuff about Bruce Arians. He finally Control just kind of like... Yeah. Let Brady have what Brady needed. There's no way Gruden.
Yeah, and then the offense takes off.
Right,
we're gonna do Brady's way. Okay.
Yeah, John Gruden is not one to relinquish control.
Correct.
And that would have been a big issue.
Correct. Man, there's got to be at least one or two more teams that tried to get Tom Brady and didn't end up with him.
You would think there were so many teams that were like the former when the Texans were sitting there a quarterback away. You would think it goes back to the old conversation. Do you want a borderline game manager / top 15 guy, or do you want arguably the best guy of all time with still enough left in the tank to take you where you've never been or need to get to?
I just think the San Francisco angle is wild. No, we got Jimmy, and like a year later, they can't get rid of him.
Yeah.
Chargers would have been unbelievable when you still had the receivers that they had.
Yeah, if they timed that Philip exit with a Brady arrival.
That would have been another one, and it's perfect with him with California roots and the Chargers never having, and again, being second fiddle in L.A. or in a dilapidated stadium in San Diego, it didn't matter. You bring him in.
How about with his former teammate Mike Vrabel in Tennessee?
Yeah.
That would have been a good one, too.
And didn't he talk to Vrabel?
I think so. I think there was like a rumor. I wonder if maybe Tennessee got eliminated by Brady.
Yeah, I don't think that Nashville's a hip and cool town now.
Yeah,
but I don't think that kind of fits into the Giselle Brady mode.
He didn't want to hand off 30 times a game.
Yeah, that too.
That true. That too. And you've got a guy that deserved and warranted getting the ball 30 times a game.
Yep.
So, Cody, your thoughts on is Dameon Pierce RB1?
Very, very much a loaded question because he got treated like it by not playing in the preseason game. And then Lovie Smith said after the game they liked what they saw from him in the Saints game. Said today again, well, we know what we saw in the Saints game. Then he tried to walk it back and be like, well, don't read too much into it. We just wanted to get these guys' carries or that guy. Pierce will finish the year as RB1. I just don't know if he's going to begin the year. Like, if they're taking their very first snap against the Indianapolis Colts on offense, is 31 in the backfield? I don't believe that will be the case.
To me, even if Marlon Mack, quote, is the starter.
Right.
Even week one, I feel like Pierce will wind up with more carries and maybe be the finisher.
I almost wonder if because BK brings this up a lot, and I think it's an astute point, Dameon Pierce never had more than 15 touches except for twice in his Florida career. Now, part of that was he was a part of a committee. Florida didn't know what they were doing with him. And I wonder if the structure of the running back room is to ease him into life in the NFL because, as we saw in the Saints game, Dameon Pierce doesn't really go out of bounds or go around people. Dameon Pierce's preference is probably contact and physicality. And so with a guy that hasn't had a ton of wear and tear on him, you don't want to just jump him from, oh, well, he had 15 touches a game in college to 30, 35 touches or 30, 35 snaps. Because remember, he's got a pass block too. So I wonder if maybe they're just going to ease him into eventually being the top carry guy.
See, I think the far-fetched thing is that when you label it as he's third string on the depth chart, but I think the more realistic thing is it's going to be a thunder and lightning. It's going to be running back by committee. He's not going to be overused, and he's not going to be the only one used, but I believe he's going to be the main guy used.
I would think through the first month, there's going to be about 10 to 20 plays that we're going to say, why wasn't Pierce in for that play? Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be 10 to 20 plays where we're like, thank God Pierce was in for that play.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's going to be like the first month.
Biggest thing for him is going to be pass block.
And that'll trickle down after the... After the first
one. I can see Mack getting 12 carries, Pierce getting 15 carries, Pierce being the guy at the goal line.
Yeah,
just don't let me see Burkhead. What's coming up on the wheelhouse?
We got lots of fun stuff on the wheelhouse. Lots about the game. Davis Mills finally answered the shock the world follow-up question from somebody. So we'll talk about that. We'll compare that to when I asked Lovie Smith about it and see who handled it.
Well, you sure did.
Apparently,
I give you credit for that.
Apparently, Lovie was... The best part was nobody heard this. They didn't hear me answering Lovie. Lovie answered for me, but I gave a different answer than Lovie's answer for me. So, well, we'll talk about that and so much more in the wheelhouse today.
Good deal, Pat. We appreciate you filling in. Off tomorrow, but hopefully here for the rest of the week.
That'd be cool. I'd be happy to join you.
That'll be fantastic. Wheelhouse coming up next. Stay tuned right here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.